Now let's go to Winky Madad and Sheila Winky, Jerusalem Day, and this is the 50th anniversary of it. It all started back in June of 1967, the Six-Day War. That was a very special time when those paratroopers broke off under the leadership of Uzi Narkis and others. They broke down off of the Mount of Olives across the Kidron Valley into the Lion Gate and up onto the Temple Mount. And they, at that time, after 2,000 years, reunited the Jewish city of Jerusalem. Did they not?
Jimmy, in addition to the name of Uzi Narkis that you mentioned, there's also Mutagur. And I think it's part of the miracle of the victory of the Six Days War, and as you mentioned, the reunification of Jerusalem, is that some of the commanders were actually around at the time of the loss of the old city in the 1948 war. Some of the Palmach people came in, broke through the Zion Gate, but they were eventually forced to leave. And so 19 years went by, and they had a chance to rectify a very painful decision to leave the old city. It eventually crumbled under the onslaught of the Jordanian legionnaires. Jews were ethnically cleansed. Over those 19 years, tens of thousands of graves on the Mount of Olives were desecrated. And here again, 19 years later, 50 years now going back, we have a reunified capital of the state of Israel.
Well, at that time, Winky, those paratroopers were big, tough, mean rascals, and they went up there. And as I heard reports from Uzi Narkis, who gave me an interview there on the Temple Mount a couple of years ago, he said those men all were tears in their eyes, almost some of them weeping uncontrollably as they were able to reunite the city of Jerusalem, eastern portion and the western portion. That was a very emotional but a very special day, wasn't it?
Absolutely, Jimmy. I have to agree with you because people don't realize, except for those 19 years of Jordanian occupation, the city had never been divided. Jews always went to the Western Wall. It was such a unique experience to have the heart of Israel's Jewish national identity, the center of its religious rituals and belief, to have it ripped out and not be able to go there. In fact, we had freedom of access written into the armistice agreements back in 1949, but the Jordanians never honored them. They shot from the walls of the old city. People were being picked off at times. And all of a sudden, this came about. I think also I want to give special gratitude to Naomi Shemer's Jerusalem of Gold song that won the song contest 3 weeks before the war, and that sort of actually contributed to the mood of the people of a longing for Jerusalem, of a feeling that something is lost, and all of a sudden, with all the threats of Egypt and Jordan and the other Arab states, here we are back at the Kotel, in Hebrew, the Western Wall.
You know, over the last 5 decades, there's always been a celebration at this time of the year, Jerusalem Day, a very special day of celebration for all of those living in Jerusalem, which, by the way, now is the most populated city in the entire state of Israel. But this is the Jubilee year, the 50th anniversary. Some special activities going on this year. Can you just rehearse a couple of those for us?
Well, first of all, let me give a plug to the institution in which I work, which is the Menachem Begin Heritage Center in Jerusalem. We've been having school kids coming up here every single day, some of them partaking of activities in the center, and some simply coming on school trips, and we're one of the stops on the way because we have a wonderful view, as you know, Jimmy, of the walls of the old city. And so I think this past 2 weeks we must have had about 3,000 school children come by us alone. There'll be the Moskowitz Prize for Zionism next week. There's the march, which we call the March of the Flags into the Old City. There's the Memorial Day on Jerusalem Day, a memorial ceremony on Ammunition Hill. And, by the way, we have a little president from a little country called Donald Trump of America, who is also going to honor us over that period of time.
That's going to be a very interesting trip for the President of the United States. By the way, his first foreign trip, as he has become president of the United States. On his way to Saudi Arabia first, his second stop will be in Jerusalem. Let's talk about that just a moment, because it has a very interesting connection to Jerusalem. There has been talk that he would move the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. What's the latest on that?
Jimmy, first time of my life on your program, I'm really going to admit I don't know completely. I don't know if anything has been changed, if anything has been decided, if he's going to make a statement that it will be done, but he's not going to do it yet, or what. It's really up in the air. There's a lot of pressure being built up upon him, both from within the State Department, from the media, and unfortunately some of the more liberal sections of the American Jewish population. So it's a typical Israeli political mess. But between you and me, I think if he tried to visit the Kaaba in Mecca, that would be a big headline.
Yes, that surely would be a very big headline. Doubt he's going to make that visit at all. I have heard talk that what the possibility may be is that the United States ambassador will actually live in Jerusalem. He has a residency there. He will work out of the American consulate there in Jerusalem and possibly make some token visits over to the embassy in Tel Aviv, and they might appease the Jewish people at this point in time with that. Have you heard anything about that possibility?
Yes, I've heard it. I've heard it. It's been discussed. I have some people who are very close to the ambassador, but so far I haven't been able to pry anything firm. I would guess that he would live in a hotel, Jimmy, because living in his house might be that he's a resident of Jerusalem rather than simply being a guest in Jerusalem. Between you and me and the thousands and tens of thousands of people listening to this, I've said it before, the 19 years between 48 and 67 were the only short period of time that the city was not united. And to have Israel's administration, control, sovereignty over the city questioned after 50 years when no other people has a better claim, and the only reason anybody else would have a claim is because they illegally occupied it at some time in history in the past, I think should not play a role within the State Department or within the White House administration.
Let's develop that just a moment. Governmental offices, the legislative body, the Knesset, the Prime Minister's office, these are just a couple of buildings and operations in Jerusalem that participate in the Israeli government. Is that correct? And are there others?
There are many others of all sorts of forms. But, Jimmy, forget about Israel. The United States Congress passed a law called the Jerusalem Embassy Act over 20 years ago, to move the embassy to Jerusalem. Why should now the will of Congress be denied by a president when, if I read the newspapers correct, everybody in Congress wants to take down the president and assert congressional authority? They've done it already. So I think that people should rethink this, and if anything, in a future peace treaty, Arabs can have certain status within the city. I don't know if Israel is prepared, and I personally am not, to share the sovereignty of it, but if they want to have ministries or institutions, I'm sure we could have it like any other country in the world has foreign consulates, embassies, or other institutions in various cities in their own countries.
You know, Winky, as I was planning to have this conversation with you, my mind went immediately to the book of Samuel, 2 Samuel to be exact. And in chapter 5, God allowed King David to become king of all 12 tribes in the city of Jerusalem, a Jebusite stronghold at that time. He gave it to the Jewish people as their political capital. And then the next chapter in 2 Samuel talks about, in chapter 6, David going to get the Ark of the Covenant, bringing it into Jerusalem so he could build a permanent worship center in the holy city. And that made it the spiritual capital. And finally, the Davidic covenant was given to David, 7th chapter of the book of 2 Samuel, which made it the eternal capital. Now, that was all 3,000 years ago. Somebody just simply needs to read the Bible, find out about the history of this great city that belongs to the Jewish people, don't they?
Yes, they do. And if I may, Jimmy, share with you a rabbinic discourse on the fact that basically, except for once or twice, in the first five books, Jerusalem is really not mentioned at all, especially in Deuteronomy. It's always said, the place which I will show you, the place to which I will bring you. Abraham goes to the land of Moriah in Hebrew, but Jerusalem is not stated. And rabbis say, we didn't want the name mentioned so that the nations would know where the capital of Israel eventually will be and where the temple will be built so they could take it over. We wanted to hide it. Well, I don't think there's any need now, Jimmy, to hide the fact that Jerusalem, where the first and second, hopefully the third temples were and will be, should be hidden any longer behind false claims of international law or diplomacy or getting Arabs upset. It's ours. The Bible says so. Our history proved it. And I think the world should recognize that.
The key statement there when Winky was telling us about all of that, the Bible says it, and that makes it absolute. Winky Madad, our special broadcast partner, helping us to find out more information about the city of Jerusalem, the 50th anniversary of the reunification of the city, and President Donald Trump on his way to Jerusalem at this time as well. Winky, thank you so much. Have a great celebration on Jerusalem Day. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Jimmy, thank you very much, and goodbye to you and our listeners.